Welcome to Untamed Blossoms, the podcast where we celebrate the untamed journey of womanhood. Here, we tell the stories of incredible women who have embraced their authenticity, inspiring others to do the same.
From entrepreneurs to artists, activists to adventurers, we share triumphs, challenges, and the beauty of self-discovery. These are the stories of women blazing their own trails, breaking free, and blooming unapologetically.
Join us to connect, be inspired, and celebrate the power of women's stories. Together, let's rewrite the rules and embrace our wildness.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms. I'm your host, Amanda Riley.
And I'm Christy Riley. Welcome to the show.
I want to talk about our moon circle.
Okay.
So we had a moon circle on Friday.
We did.
It was a Virgo full moon.
It was.
If you listen to two episodes prior, you will hear Christy's chaotic recalling of the day. But after that, we actually had a moon circle.
We did.
So it was pretty chaotic for you.
The theme continued through the night. Yeah. Yeah. We had a teenage, what she called a rager, party. Actually, that was the term my husband gave it. We have this barn that, you know, has been converted and to have parties in for our family mostly. And she really wanted to have, she's graduating in May. She wanted to have a last hurrah. But I was really, you know, we weren't condoning alcohol, but we kind of probably knew that they were going to sneak alcohol in. We don't drink really, but every little piece of alcohol that we had in here, we took in the house. But, you know, and we really policed it. We stayed up. If anybody knows us, they know we're in bed at 8:30. You know, we stayed up until 1:30 just to make sure everybody was safe and that nobody was trying to leave after they had drank something or took something. Or
you knew it was going to be a long night from the moment you opened your peepers.
The moment it started, and we had a huge day. We recorded that day. I had 10 other things. I had biofeedback that day. I had a whole bunch of stuff happening. And we just started balls to the wall. And it just never stopped. And so moon circle was really like, and we're trying to fix the driveway at the farm because this place is so magical, lots of people want to be here and we have a big family. And so the driveway becomes a tenuous spot where people park. We are constantly shuffling cars. So we're creating an extra parking pad, basically. And that was a surprise this week. And moving forward, my husband started it and he was going to try to finish it himself. Turns out our tractor is not really big enough for that project. Mm-hmm. So we ended up having to hire an excavation guy to do it.
Great.
He was full tilt on Friday.
Oh, yeah. He was going ham.
So I arrive after
said,
this
whole day. You said, I'm here to move these rocks and I will not stop until every rock is moved.
Now, my husband had told him to be done at 10 till 6, knowing that we were starting our outside under the full moon around the fire moon circle on Friday. And so it's like 5:59 and I'm already super anxious just from the energy of the full moon. Like it was the eclipse and
Virgo.
I had just been feeling it horribly all day. Like I was really wound up and anxious all day. And mostly because I was anxious about this party and how it was going to turn out. You know, I've worked really hard out here. I didn't want it to be destroyed. I also was worried about the kids and making sure that they were all going to be safe but have a good time. And then we recorded that day and had an event that day. So it was, and then the excavator guy was blowing dust. We had a wind advisory. I'm like, we might have to move inside.
You're like, we should move this inside. I'm like,
the fire lit. Like, I've got wood everywhere. And for some reason, only the kindling would burn. The big logs wouldn't catch. And so I'm constantly trying to feed the fire because we needed it for Moon Circle, but it wouldn't stay lit. So I never felt like I fully relaxed during Moon Circle. And I was grateful that you and Sarah said that you really didn't notice.
Despite I'm going to be clear. I knew.
You
knew. But that was just because I know you.
Yes.
You weren't presenting to the group as that was the case.
Good. Now, I was trying hard not to.
When I saw you just get up and start picking up sticks out of the yard in the middle of a circle to add more to the fire, I thought, she's still on this roller coaster. She's never gotten off that ride. And I knew.
This is absolutely 1,000% true. Despite me taking some, you know, plant medicine to try to help my anxiousness so I could be really present during Moon Circle.
You were something.
It did not work. It did not work. So I was grateful for everyone who came. I hope that nobody really picked up on my energy. You know, you want to be really relaxed in those spaces and enjoy yourself and enjoy your company and enjoy the ladies who show up. And
but I will challenge you, though. The moon doesn't give a shit.
Uh-uh.
The moon was in Virgo. After a lunar eclipse, you think the moon wanted you to be relaxed during a ceremony for her?
No. And, you know, the point is to show you things that aren't working for you, right? And so although I don't believe that this place in the moon circle is not what's working for me, but it is a conversation between me and me, right? About can I relax in the chaos? That's really what it's all about, right? It showed me that I'm a control freak and I like my environment controlled and my things controlled because that's how I can control my anxiety. And I was confronted on that day with a whole lot of things out of my control.
That's so crazy because I wasn't confronted at all during mine.
You were very chill.
Until I wasn't.
Yeah, until we run out of time. That's when Amanda gets anxious. But
until 24 hours later.
24 hours later, yeah.
You know, this full moon is about letting things go, like writing down what's bothering you, letting things go, burning them in the fire. Great. I was chill. I was relaxed. I was cool. You know, when it was my turn to share, I talked a little bit about my husband and how I just wish sometimes he would take more control over his health.
Right.
Right.
For those of you who don't know, Amanda goes to the gym 6 days a week, works out like a beast, is on a mission to become the most jacked version of herself and be strong. Not thin, strong.
Strong.
She wants to be strong.
I also quit drinking, which everyone's very well aware of at this point in time. But that had a huge impact. And I try to mitigate risks.
Yeah.
I'm not perfect. I did eat a lot of gummy bears recently. But for the most part, I take it seriously that I want to live well.
Right.
Not like I'm not trying to like live till I'm 120. That sounds like a lot of work. But I would like to extend my life of activity for as long as I can before that declines. Right.
So that's you want to take care of your meat suit so that it takes care of you into your elderly years.
I'm going to be hiking out here when I'm 70. You know, I don't want to be a person who can't be active. So anyway, long story short, I, in this moon circle, share that I wish my husband would take his health seriously in a myriad of ways. And it was causing me to feel frustrated that it was taking it seriously.
You brought it back to yourself, though. It wasn't just a random complaint about your husband. No. It was causing conflict in yourself, and you recognized that you were wanting control of that. And
yes,
you know, I don't want people to believe that you just threw that out in the circle, that you were just complaining about your husband. That's not, you kind of came full circle.
If you want to take it that way, also men are really frustrating. So sometimes I do. But this, I mean, you know, that's the whole thing. You pull tarot cards and you kind of work through what it is. And I'm going through a big transformation. All my cards, I got the Butterfly Maiden transformation card. I got literally the Transmutation card. All of mine was going through big transformations right now, which I am. And then I pulled the Karma card and I thought, one of these things are not like the other, right? I'm going through a lot of transition. That makes sense. Three cards about transition. I can't remember what the other one was. The star one.
Yeah.
But then I got the Karma card and I was like, well, that doesn't really fit. 24 hours later, you're taking me to the emergency room because my heart rate skyrocketed from 54 to 166.
Correct.
I'm fine. Everything's cool.
Twice.
Couple times, couldn't get it to come down. Everything's fine. I'm cool. I'm going to go get some things checked out. Could have been a panic attack. Could have been AFib. We don't know. I have a little heart murmur situation. Point is, I have been on the go for a lot of time. I'm not in a high stress situation any longer, but I have, I would say, quadrupled my workload in life.
Correct.
And I do ignore almost every health issue because I think there's nothing that lifting a few weights can't fix.
Yeah.
And I will drink some extra protein and creatine and it'll be fine. Turns out the Karma card was very specific into, hey, bitch, before you start, you know, telling other people what they should with their health, why don't you get some things checked out?
Like me. Sarah tells us that all the time. Like Me.
So I did. I'm fine. It's cool. But all I'm trying to say is do not come to a full moon circle unless you want your filth read back to you. No one's going to read it out loud.
In real time.
100%. This is, Christy, you said it. This is all a you and you game.
That's right.
And full moon circles will do nothing if not show you your shit.
Yep. You think you're talking about other people.
You think.
But you're really talking about yourself. Yeah.
So we have scheduled our next two for the next 2 months. They're coming up. I want to say, and I'll put this in the show notes in case I'm wrong, but I think we said April 11th. Is that Friday?
Yeah. And then the Monday in May is May 12th, I think, or 12th to the 11th. It's somewhere in there, but it's on our, it's the next, it's on our website.
Yep. It's on our website. It's on our Facebook. So just, you know, I'm not saying you're going to end up in the ER if you come. I'm just saying if you're working through some stuff, it's a good time to write things down, you know, bring a journal, bring something to write with and work through some stuff in community.
Yeah. And it was great. Even though I, you know, and we had new people there, which was awesome. Yeah. Somebody that came that didn't know any of us, which I thought was super brave. And I hope that Jules, you come and see us again and come to the next circles. It was great to meet you. But, you know, that not knowing anybody and showing up to a full moon circle, I just think that that's really cool.
Yeah.
Turns out she came because it was a very vague description on Facebook.
This part, you're welcome.
Which we kind of did on purpose. Like, we want people to be explorative and come and see if what resonates with them. And so we had two or three new people that were there that we had never had in circle before. So it was great.
Yeah. Please join us next time.
Yeah.
Today's guest, we have April.
We were introduced to her by a mutual friend.
Yep.
Who thought she would be a good guest on the podcast.
Yeah.
She does art therapy, I believe.
Yeah. And some work with sobriety things.
Yeah, yeah, some sobriety stuff. So we're excited to talk to her about basically tying art and art therapy into spirituality and connecting to your higher consciousness.
Yeah.
That's what she's discovered and now teaches how to do that to other people. So hopefully she has a really cool story to share with us.
Can't wait to hear it. Well, hello, April. Welcome to the pod. How are you?
Hi. Hi. I'm so good. How are you all?
We're great. We're great.
Good.
It's beautiful and the sun shining outside. So, you know.
Yeah. After the doom and gloom of the Midwestern winter, this is like coming out of the dark, right? Yeah. And you're so bright. And I love the pink and all of that. It makes me like spring happy.
Yes. Yes. We can't live without the sun, her and I. So we're like in that way.
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
Where are you located?
I am in Michigan, Southern Michigan, kind of right between Ann Arbor and Detroit.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. It was still chilly up there.
Yes. Yeah. But like, just like Ohio, very much loving the sun here too.
Yeah, we can't wait for it to come back. We usually travel during the winter and we didn't this time. And man, I felt that. We usually go somewhere where it's sunny and I didn't get to. And
yeah,
I'm recognizing it's a hard must have.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we got connected with you through our friend Sarah and she had nothing but wonderful things to say about you. So before we get started today and talk about your background and all of that, we would just love to know a little bit about you and where you are in today's world.
Yeah. Sarah, that magical, beautiful Venusian soul she is, she and I connected years ago. And so I was super happy to learn about what y'all are doing as far as this platform for women. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Of course.
This is great. And I've had so much fun just listening to all the different interviews you've already done. Yeah. So my background is that I'm from Ohio originally. So we have that in common. I started out in Ohio with getting a degree in fine art. And it, over the course of 20 some years, led me on a winding path to where I am today, completing my master's to become an art therapist. Wow. And so that's kind of the story I brought as far as, you know, where I began with it and then where I'm at now and figuring that all out.
Totally. And did you go to the Columbus Art School?
I did not. I actually went to Bowling Green State University.
Nice. Wonderful.
Perfect. Yeah.
I went to Heidelberg and Tiffin, so we always went to Bowling Green to check it out on the weekends.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. All those little Ohio towns are connected in all these intricate ways. It's very interesting that way, how there's all those little connections.
Yeah, especially in rural Ohio. Yeah. It's like an hour drive.
Fine. Nothing.
We'll go.
Yeah, for a hangout for the night.
Yes.
Wild. For sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome. And you have a very deep story, really, in the connectedness. We talked a little bit in your intro about art therapy and consciousness and connecting to your deeper self. But I think we have to kind of go back and talk about your sort of origin story and kind of walk us through your life a little bit. You don't just get to that kind of deep place unless, I mean, maybe you're a starseed. It's possible. I mean, that's possible. I think Sarah is, for sure.
Agreed. Agreed. Right?
So it's, just walk us through your life and kind of how you got to this place of knowing.
And the knowing is just, I think that I've come to is knowing that I don't know, and that asking the questions and figuring out what questions I'm asking is kind of the knowing. Is just that I got to keep asking questions, right? You know? So, So I think that I can begin with going to art school because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed art. And I kind of knew that I needed something a little more structured besides just making art to kind of do after school. And so I majored in graphic design because in my mind I was like, okay, well, this is going to give me a salary, and this won't, you know, require me to try to be an artist, because we all know how, you know, hard that can be. I think something like a stat I saw was like 10% of art grads actually end up going to make a living from art, which is just the nature of it, you know. So I did that, and it didn't work out. I learned really quickly that I didn't want to sit at a computer all day long. And I ended up finding a different career. And I've been a hairstylist for 20 years, and it served me really well in terms of, you know, being able to use creative skills and work with people, which I love working with people. But I think more important to the story of where I am is that I left art school feeling like I didn't know how to continue to have a thriving artistic practice. Mm. And this is sort of where, you know, leading me to where I am now, because I feel like I spent about 20 years not knowing how to develop, continue, and have a regenerative art practice that was meaningful to me. And I have a sense that I'm not alone in that. I have a sense that that's something that might be common.
That's something that we have a couple of friends who went through, you know, art school or some iteration of that. And they all say the very same thing, is like, well, now what? What do you do after this? And how do I continue doing this in a meaningful way that isn't maybe commercialized or feel like I'm selling myself out, but that allows me to stay creative and have joy? So definitely not alone in that.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It is. One of the like main problems I've faced is just how to keep going with it. And for the longest time, I say that my artist self was asleep, that she was kind of sleeping. And a lot of it, looking back, I just didn't have the support or nowhere to go or nowhere to turn for that support to try to cultivate that. And then also one thing I've found is that it's such an individual personal process, that so much of it, you know, relates to that inner self and that inner work. Again, that there's not a lot of support out there for that and how to navigate that. So that was kind of what I was up against. I was also kind of looking back, you know, there's this conditioning, I think, that we all absorb, whether we want to or not, that, you know, really forces us to seek outside ourselves for answers, to look outside of ourselves for, you know, that confirmation that I am an artist. Where do I find that outside of myself? And so I think There was some of that coming into play through the years too, that was sort of keeping me in that imposter syndrome a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's worse for women too. I think it's really prevalent for women.
And did you feel like it was a struggle too to find a strong art community after you graduated? We've definitely heard that before too, of like, it's pretty competitive and less, I guess, accessible to have more community in the art space.
Yes, 100%. I actually didn't leave school with like a strong art community. And I was, you know, I left and I moved out west. And, you know, I did find a lot of fellow creative spirit in my hairstylist career. But yeah, definitely, like as far as fine art, I wasn't, or that type of art, I wasn't finding a lot of community in that. The other thing that plays into this too is this understanding now that needing to be with myself, needing to be able to be with myself on a real kind of intimate level was required for doing a creative practice, a meaningful creative practice. And I really didn't have the capacity to do that. And I went through about 15 years of substance abuse issues. And this was sort of stealing some of the life force from me that would have allowed me to continue this creative practice as well. So that was one of the things I feel like that was sort of reaching outside of myself for some of this that I had to then end up turning inward and finding that there.
But so going back to some of that substance abuse, I know that's something that is we're very, you know, have a lot of experience with, whether it be personal or the people we love. Anything that you want to share with that time or like how you got through that or what you looked for in terms of like guidance and community through that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I knew for a long time, even back to my college days where it kind of all, where a lot of that substance abuse habit started, honestly, I think I knew somewhere inside that something about the way I was drinking wasn't okay. But it was a soft voice that was drowned out by one, like insecurities and low self-worth that, you know, were there. I think a lot of it I traced back to some childhood trauma. But also because it was drowned out, that small voice was drowned out by everything around me in the culture saying that like drinking like this was okay, that this is perfectly okay, this is perfectly acceptable, there's nothing wrong with this, even though I heard this whisper. And it just took me a long time and it took my substance abuse progressing to certain places for me to start to hear that voice and make that, you know, more important than all of the reinforcement I was seeing around me telling me that this behavior was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I didn't think I was an artist. I had this art degree for 15 years. I didn't think I was an artist. I couldn't identify as an artist. And, I was starving like my internal life force with this cycle of binge drinking and looking for excitement and maybe even an expressive outlet through this substance abuse. Yeah. And what happened was through the healing of quitting drinking, I was able to find art as a place to lean into to replace what I was seeking outside of me from a place inside that is actually regenerative, that doesn't run out, and I don't have to keep chasing. It's like it's always there. So instead of chasing, like every weekend I was like chasing this fun or this excitement, and instead I was able to kind of turn that around. So in the end, I did find a creative practice that's deeply meaningful, but it took all this struggle and all this kind of going through that those cycles and that destructive habit and then coming through to see how art can be like a very prescriptive medicine, in my opinion. Yeah. Like we can use our creative self and our creative abilities to be a healing medicine for ourselves. And that's what I found, pretty much.
And it's really hard to listen or tap into that when you're numbing out with alcohol too, which I think is always the push and pull of addiction, is you're chasing this thing that if you really just stop chasing, you would be able to listen and tap into. And I think it's really beautiful that you've been able to do that. And we have a few friends who are also sober and mention the same things, including myself, is, wow, that thing that you really wanted has been within you all along.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's just, we're kind of set up into these systems around us to like not see that. Like, I don't think it's easy to see that. It's easier to see that, to feel like you're not enough and that you need something else outside of you.
For sure.
Yeah. And the culture, you're not wrong about our culture. We talked about this on a sober episode the other day, is, you know, our entire society is set up on every celebration in order to have fun or in order to feel like you're fancy or celebratory. It's around alcohol, every birthday, backyard picnic, wedding, you know, going out with your friends in college, like everybody's binge drinking, everybody's getting, you know, wasted every weekend. So it normalizes that in our culture, and that, you know, and then if you have anything that you're running from, right, any trauma or things that you're totally unaware of at the time, I think it just makes that much worse. So I do think that alcohol is starting to get the recognition that it deserves, right? It used to be that a glass of wine a day was great for you. The American Heart Association would be like, it's great. All of that has come to a screeching halt. And they're like, actually, zero alcohol is good for you. Like, it is a poison to your body. And so that, our, at least our medical community is now starting to support that. And I think the younger generations are starting to drink less, honestly, than, not to say they're not drinking, but they're becoming more cognizant of it, I think. And I think that's a positive from all of this. Hopefully we see a shift in that soon.
Yeah. And, you know, this always too, like just my own experience, never from a place of judgment, right? I mean,
right.
Like the thing is that when you recognize that it's kind of set up around us like this, and we don't have supports that are regenerative, you know, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that, you know, we turn to the easiest thing to help ourselves that we can find, right? I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us about the process of tapping into your art, though? So what did that look like for you? And did you join classes, or did you like create your own kind of circle? What did that look like?
Yes. I'm so glad you asked. So part of this was during COVID years. So of course, everything was shut down. So unfortunately, I did not have the community necessarily at the time. That was a big part of it. But that was the time when I met Sarah through Instagram. So, you know, all the pros and cons, right, of social media and the connections we make and some of these beautiful connections that I never could have guessed would have come up. But so I really wanted to bring this topic in because a lot of this inspires who I want to become as an art therapist. But I, 3 years before I quit drinking, I wanted to quit smoking cigarettes. I used to smoke cigarettes while I drank. I was like, and when I didn't drink, I didn't want anything to do with them. And my doctor told me, if you quit smoking cigarettes by the time you're 35, you have like way decreased risk of different health problems, right? So that was my goal. I wanted to quit smoking by the time I was 35. Now, I drank probably like 2 to 3 nights a week. So even though I only smoked when I drank, let's be real, like I was smoking like quite a bit probably. So anyway, I had a friend out in Denver because I lived in Colorado for 15 years. Actually, that's part of the story. I ended up moving out to Colorado for 15 years before I came back here to the Midwest. And one of the people I met was a hypnotherapist. So Jay Tolan out there in Denver, thank you again. I'm just going to share this story. I was cutting Jay's hair, and we decided we were going to trade haircuts for hypnotherapy. And I used hypnotherapy with him to quit smoking. And drinking was the only trigger I had for smoking. So I had to stop drinking for like 4 to 6 weeks because I was going to do this big push to try to quit. But part of that quitting smoking 3 years later really informed how I was going to end up being able to quit drinking. It was like a muscle memory because it had worked for me. Hypnotherapy had worked for me for smoking. When I finally got to the point where I stopped thinking I could just control my drinking and I realized I actually just had to quit completely, it was actually hypnotherapy and my experience with hypnotherapy that I believe played a huge role in allowing me to get to that point. So in hypnotherapy, have either of y'all experienced that before?
No.
Okay.
Tell us all about it, though.
Yeah, all the details.
Yeah, well, there's like this image, I think, of what we've seen like in the past on TV of just like, let me just put this person to sleep and have them like sound like a chicken or something. Like,
yeah.
Right, across the stage. But no, it's very much for me, it was just like with Jay, it was just a relaxed state and a lot of visualization and a lot of tapping into what I think was subconscious knowing. And so visualization played a huge piece, being able to visualize different things such as like how the smoking was affecting me internally in my body. There was an exercise about picturing how big the pile of cigarettes would be that you've smoked for your whole life, which was like a very, you know, uncomfortable, not good picture to make.
A very Marie Kondo concept. Yeah. You know, let's put it all out in front of you to show you what it looks like. Yeah.
Yes, very much so. It kind of built what I felt like was a muscle that seemed like it might have been related to my subconscious, because I think there's so many layers, especially when I go back to the whole drinking thing. It's like, even when you know that you don't want to in addiction, it's like, you're still doing it. Like, you know, it's bad for you on some level, but you're still doing it. So there's that conscious versus subconscious type thing. And the visualization was just very powerful for me. And one of the things I came to for the reason that I overdrank was because there was a feeling of being free associated with it. There was this rebel quality to drinking for me that I was trying to express through these weekends and these binge drinking experiences. And so what I did when I quit was I tried to channel that need for no rules and being a rebel type energy into my artwork, into my art making. So it worked as sort of one of many different replacements that I had to come up with for triggers or reasons that I would turn to alcohol. And the art became the place where I could go and there were no rules and I could go do and be whatever I wanted on the canvas.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. And so how long were you in hypnotherapy?
What's funny is that I did hypnotherapy for several sessions. There were a couple leading up sessions for the smoking. That was when I was 35. And then 3 years later, when I was 38, I went to Jay again and said, I want to do hypnotherapy to help control my drinking. That was the goal. I went into hypnotherapy saying, there's no reason I should ever have more than 3 drinks. So let's work on this. This is my goal. Let's use hypnotherapy. I did one session of hypnotherapy to control my drinking. And within 6 weeks, I had quit completely.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's so funny that as someone who was abusing alcohol, it's so funny that your first thought is always is, how can I control this thing so I
not
can do
quit
it in moderation like everybody else? And then once you get into it, I feel like once you start the process of looking at those behaviors, it's a bright ass mirror. And it is hard to be like, yes, moderation is key. It's like, no, why am I doing this at all? This is crazy. So totally get that. And that process, did you go to meetings or did you just, like, what did that look like?
Yeah. So Looking back at my sobriety journey, one of the key things that I was missing was community. And, you know, with my training now in addictions therapy, addictions counseling, I know how important that community piece is. But for me and for a lot of people, self-reliance to a fault is something that comes up around addiction a lot. I think a lot of people that struggle with addiction have this, right? There's a really awesome TED Talk that I don't have the name of right now, but it talks about addiction as a bonding issue, like a human intimacy issue. I definitely know that I was using alcohol as, you know, to help social anxiety. This has to do with what I discovered about my personal trauma, my childhood traumas, and how that created severe social anxiety. And I was using alcohol, you know, in that way because I wasn't able to be in community without it at the time, really. I mean, not very easily. It was very uncomfortable. So a lot of this played into the way that my quitting journey looked. So the other thing about programs, I love that programs help so many people. And I think that there should always be a continuation of every way that has ever helped anybody should continue to be always, right? Like I've never, but I do think that it's not a one size fits all. And the thing about working a program for me, I could never identify as an alcoholic. I could never take that on. I didn't drink every day and I just couldn't. And I know that some people can, and that's okay. But for me, there was so much shame. And anybody that's gone through this process of quitting, I think, can probably relate to the shame. Like the shame that's there is so strong, and it's so, even the term alcoholic probably kept me drinking for a long time because there was no way I could identify that way. And, you know, I still wonder, I mean, maybe probably at some level there were moments where that came in, as far as, am I an alcoholic? I faced that a few times and tried to get there. But you know, I just felt like, because I relate it to the hypnotherapy, I really do. It was like a muscle I returned to. I had quit smoking. I had gotten through needing a cigarette when I drank. And once it's almost like I remembered the muscle memory of quitting smoking, and I used it toward drinking. And it took me a long time. I mean, this is like 10 years leading up. But since then, I've learned about all these different ways. That book, Holly Whitaker's Quit Like a Woman. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen that book?
Yeah. The guest we had just the other day, one of my best friends, she gave a shout out to that book as well, because I really leaned into the Naked Mind book, but Quit Like a Woman was the one that really helped her. So
yes. Yes, it's so good. And she gives a lot of permission for quitting to look a lot of different ways. And that really lands and tracks for me. There's also naltrexone. It's a medication that I want to say is used for opiate addiction. But there's it's showing that it works also for alcoholism as well. There's just all these different ways. I think there's a lot of different ways to approach it. And I did it. I had one friend at the time who'd quit. And so I leaned into that a little bit. I saw a lot of people on social media who I could identify with that had quit and used that as a huge inspiration. So there were several ways. I did feel a lack of community in hindsight. And I often wonder what that would have looked like differently had I had it. But I think, yeah, just holding space for that, it looks different for everybody.
And then when did you decide to pivot into therapy?
Yeah, it was similar time. I kind of was like, well, I can't stand behind the chair until I'm 50 years old. My body's going to break down. It's a hard job. Hairstyle, it's really hard on your body. And I knew I needed to figure something else out. And, you know, just everything I was going through in that journey and seeing how art was shaping who I was becoming after I quit, and wanting, and I worked at a hair salon in Denver, And there were a lot of homeless population around this salon. And during the same time, you know, I had an experience where I had a guy come in for a haircut into the salon. And he told me that he was about to, he had $5 and he was about to get a job and that he really needed a haircut. And he sat down in my chair and I said, no problem. I can give you a cleanup. Come sit down. You know, we'll do this. I was a little bit scared. I'm not going to lie, because there was stuff at this in this area of downtown Denver that we would see at my salon where, you know, you weren't sure always what was going to happen outside. And so I was, there was a part of me that was a little afraid, but I started talking to him and he told me that he used to be an architect. He used to be married. He used to be an architect. He looked like he was maybe 50 some years old. And I started thinking to myself, you know, I wonder if he's telling me the truth or if this is just like a story he's telling me, because I could tell he was drunk. And then I realized, like, it probably is the truth. You know, it probably is the truth. This guy probably was an architect and was married. And now here he is, like, you know, just trying to get back on his feet and trying to get a job again. And it just hit me. I was just like, this could be any of us. Right. Like we right. are all just like a few different circumstances away from just depending on, you know, our traumas and our deficits and different things like this. And so there were some experiences kind of like that one kind of leading up to the quitting drinking and just realizing that these cycles of generational trauma and the deficits that so many people face that push into addiction or depression or unhealthy coping mechanisms, they are there. And, you know, people need support. People need help. And if art and creativity is a way that can do that, I just hope to show or guide as many people toward that as I can with art therapy.
Yeah. And we've talked about different programs and this is just another program, right? This is another way to deal with whatever it is that's leading you down that path of voiding out and numbing out and medicating and all the things that we talk about. But, you know, it's interesting that the homeless guy comes in and, you know, here's you, right? Like this could be me if I continue on the path that I'm on. A few decisions can lead me down this path. A few extra days of drinking that I don't get back and cannot work. And, you know, like you played it forward, you know, you played the tape forward. And there's lots of programs. AA is very religious based and some people don't identify with that. And, you know, there's a lot of different groups and there are a lot of creatives out there. And I think especially females, we are naturally creative creatures and finding a space that feels inclusive and safe and creative all at the same time to give people an opportunity to express their creativity in a way that, you know, and what you said that yours was coming out as a, you know, your drinking was to be a rebel. So I would love for you to describe how you, your artwork reflected that when you found yourself like, oh, I can do anything I want. So what does rebellious artwork look like when you're starting to get sober?
Yes, I love that. Well, part of it was just in the process. So yeah. One of the things that promotes perfectionism and imposter syndrome for a lot of different things, right? But for artists, it's like, well, am I good enough to call myself an artist, right? It's like, well, and when we say good enough, a lot of times it's based on skill of art making, right? Like, am I skilled enough as an artist? That's part of like the art school. So much of art school is about building skill. And, you know, there's this idea that, you know, creativity is just like this God bestowed gift on like certain people, right? We hear this all the time and people have this idea. And there's a part of, you know, our perception of what is good art that's just skill. And it's like you can practice and become practiced and like skilled at anything with enough time, right? Yeah. And, you know, maybe it comes more naturally to some than others. But as far as skill goes, it's like that can't be the only way we define if we're doing art for a purpose or if art is valuable. Like it can't just be that, you know, I'm skilled at it. And so for me, that came into play with art making. It's like, well, how satisfied was I with this hour of art making? And then sometimes you judge it by like, well, how good is it? Like, how's my skill? Did I make that eye exactly like the eye in the picture looked? And it just took all the joy and the fun and the healing medicine kind of out of it for me. And so the way I leaned into art to express this rebel, I spent 4 years adamantly resisting any type of skill building in my art making. I would go to the canvas with no reference photo, with no idea what was going to come out, and just letting it go, and just letting whatever came out, come out. And I had to do that for 4 years. I could not let myself get stuck in imposter syndrome or fear that I wasn't good enough, because if I did, it wasn't going to help me. And so leaning into that need for no rules and rebelling against, like, is this good enough? Is the skill shining through? That for 4 years straight kind of like really supported my healing journey with quitting.
Well, because really, imposter syndrome and perfectionism is really still seeking outside validation for your worth, right? And so that's just another form in art, and whether it's anything, right? It could be replaced with anything, your pottery, whatever creative thing you're doing. If you're continuing to, well, I'm not good enough, and perfectionist and imposter syndrome, that's all based in external validation when really you're looking for the validation inside. So however ways, and that's a great example of just squashing that. I mean, like, I'm not going to look at it through this eye, because really that's just looking for outside validation. Is this good enough? What do you think? You know, getting that little pop of dopamine back from people to say, oh no, it's great, you're great, that you just avoided that completely to say, nope, this is for me, and whatever shows up, and I'm going to be good with it. And it took 4 years. And I think that's really important for people to hear.
Yeah. I do too. I think that having that commitment to that was really important, and the time commitment. And I didn't set out to say that this was going to last for 4 years, but right. I just kept doing that and staying with that until I felt strong enough to bring some of the skill work back in. But it definitely informed the way my creative journey went forward. And I think what you're talking about is absolutely right, correct, of like how I have felt art therapy work for folks, because when you're doing that in your creative process, it's a mirror for how you can view everything else in your life in terms of how perfectionism and self-worth is playing out in relationships or anything else, right, that you're approaching in life. So I love that you brought that in, because I feel like that's kind of the magic of how art therapy can work for people.
And so did you end up going to like therapy school? Like, did you end up getting licensed, or like, can you talk to us about that shift into doing it professionally?
Yeah, for sure. Just kind of paired with, well, I had wonderful experiences with Sarah. We did some art therapy sessions together, and I had some pretty big shifts. And so, part of having those experiences, my own personal experience with leaning into the art, and then also looking for another career. Like, basically, I needed a career that I felt like I could do into my potentially 70s, right? Because I just couldn't see. I just thought, what if something happened and I can't do hair? And I really needed, I mean, at the time, I'd been single for like all that time on and off. I didn't have a partner. And when you're trying to make it, you know, single, everything is double down. So I was sort of just really looking out for my future planning and going, okay, like, how am I going to support myself if I do stay on my own? And something that I can enjoy that's meaningful and do into my later part of life. So all those things kind of culminated into applying to become an art therapist. And the school that I chose, the program I chose, is a dual program. So I will be a licensed counselor in the state of Michigan as well as a licensed art therapist. So I'm in the final quarter, just doing the internship now, getting experience working with clients. And that's been really fun, and there's so much to learn. And then, you know, from there, it's just figuring out, you know, kind of where I'm going with all of that.
Love that.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. And is like substance abuse and that kind of thing something that you want to really focus on in your art therapy?
I am still staying really open. So in my internship, my goal is to work with as many populations as I can to really get a feel for, you know, what lands and how it is to work with many different ones. But that's definitely something I'm open to for sure. That's
awesome. Well, tell us, do you have women that's been in your life that you've given, that's helped you along your way, that's inspired you, that's been a source of constant, like, referrals in your world that you want to shout out to right now?
I do. So I would first have to name my grandmother. She's 92 years old. She's one of 12. She was born right in the middle of 12 kids. And, you know, she grew up during the Depression, and she is like my pillar of just consistency in life. Like, that woman just never stops. She's never stopped, and she doesn't let anything get in her way or get her down. And she just, that consistency of just like waking up every day and doing it and going for it. And I just really admire that in her. And she's been a real constant for me in terms of like what that looks like to just go every single day. I also would name Georgia O'Keeffe as one of my artistic heroes. She was one of the first American visual artists to really make a living and sell her art and make a decent living. And that woman, for her time, she was living life in a way that was just way outside of cultural norms at the time. Right. She was out there living on her own in New Mexico, walking around the high desert, looking for bones. Mm-hmm. And at that time, for a woman to be living that way, and she did it because it fed her soul and fed her creative self. And she didn't care that it wasn't proper, right? And I that hear. Has been something that I just really admire in her.
Yeah.
And then I have to also name, the third one I would name would be Carolyn Meese. And she is an author. One of her books that I love so much called Sacred Contracts. Hmm. And she's from Chicago, and she really has this Midwestern, I'm just going to give it to you straight, sister vibe. And as a Midwestern woman, there's nothing I can really appreciate more. So she's a very much like a spiritual teacher for me. She's a theologist, and I really lean into her for spiritual guidance a lot. And I just resonate with her tell it like it is, you know, form.
I love
she
that.
She speaks in.
I've never heard of that. I'll have to put that on my list.
Yeah, we'll have to put that in the show notes for today so people can check it out if they're interested. So
for sure.
Any projects you have coming up or things that you are hoping to do in the future? And then along with that, where can people follow your journey and follow as you transition into this therapist role?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm just starting out to build some offerings. Right now, I have a freebie on my site. It is remedyarts.com. And I created a free download that leans into astrology, actually. So I'm a huge astrology lover. It's part of what connected Sarah and I with human design, because there's that astrology human design connection.
You have to tell us what you are. What are you?
Yeah, what are your big three? Yes. What's your design? We need to know.
Yes. I'm a Sagittarius sun, Gemini moon, and Virgo rising.
Wow. She's a Sag sun and I'm a Gemini moon.
All right.
Crazy.
Yeah, I love it.
And then what's your human design?
Oh, this one I don't know as well, but I'm a 2-4 line.
Okay. Are you a manifesting generator, projector, manifester?
I'm a generator.
generator.
Love that.
Perfect. Perfect.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We obviously love astrology too. And we're both manifesting generators. So we're a crazy town over here.
Lots of energy over here, just like you.
This is how you're getting all this stuff done, right?
How we get it all done. Yeah. We're if people watch us, they're like, these two. There's a lot happening. For sure.
What are your moons and the other signs that go with you?
Well, I don't know exactly what time I was born, so I'm still guessing at my rising. But I'm a Sag moon and Cancer rise and Sag sun and a Cancer moon. Right now it says Aries. It doesn't really fit for me. So it's possible.
Believe it more.
Sarah's going to help me through human design to see if we can pinpoint it more. But back in my day, I was born in 1971. They didn't put your birth on your birth certificate. It doesn't have the time. So nobody remembers back in the day. So I don't really know what time I was born. And all of our documents were lost in a house fire when I was little. So when I was like in the fifth grade. So all that documentation was lost. So I don't know, I guess on that one, but.
Yeah.
And I'm a Leo sun, Gemini moon, Sag rising. And my Virgo shows up in Venus for me. So I'm also a control freak in my love life.
I love these mixes. This is really good mixes together. There's so much air and fire going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So much.
My whole chart is air and fire. Like, I am so ungrounded. You can't even imagine. Same. I went to a psychic and she's like, wow, never really seen a chart like this. And I was like, thank you. I think. I don't know.
Floating around, calls in the scene.
Doing my thing. That's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, I love the change makers, right? The change makers of the fire and air.
We are I believe that. I do believe that. And, you know, we're real passionate about telling people stories like you. There's just so many incredible women doing so much great work in our communities around the nation and the world that's literally why we started this podcast is to just highlight what people are doing. And it's so easy to get swept away in all the negativity in the world and the patriarchy and you know, men doing stupid shit. And yet we have all of these women that we should be celebrating. And that's really what this platform is about, is let's celebrate all these incredible women doing hard work and great things for their community. And we appreciate what you're bringing to the table, what you're going to bring to the table moving forward. Everybody also needs a great hairdresser. So all the stuff you've been doing has been amazing. Like, every woman needs that too. So, you know, we really appreciate all these great, including you, all the things that you're doing through your own journey, just inspiring so many people. And we talk about the ripple effect almost every episode of how that ripples out. That healing yourself is really your mission here on this earth, is my opinion, and probably yours as well, is that we can only take care of ourselves. And from that, it'll ripple out to other people just naturally. And sometimes even through businesses and intentionally, but definitely just by proxy. You know, you don't have to have a business to help people. You can just help people by helping yourself. And so you've already done a lot of that heavy lifting. So good for you.
Yes. I love it. I love the sentiment of all of it, because like you said, it's not focusing on the lack. It's just focusing on what's already there and what's already growing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I fear we sidetracked you hard there with astrology, but
sorry.
No, that was, you know, we get really excited about it. But so you have a digital download that's available for free right now that kind of leans into astrology, correct?
Yes. Yes. I do. It is Discovering Your Cosmic Essence, Your Cosmic Creative Essence. So it's a free download, remedyarts.com. On there, also my Instagram is apriljay.remedyarts. You can access the free download there. And so what you can get from that is plug in your birth chart, and I can tell you how to enhance your creative flow based on the creativity part of your chart. So I'm taking the part of your chart that focuses on creativity, and I'm giving tips and suggestions of how to just really nurture your personal creative flow based on your birth chart.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We'll be doing that.
Yeah. And then beyond that,
we'll be doing that for sure. Yeah.
Yes, check it out. Check it out. And beyond that, I'm developing a supportive course for folks who got out of art school and didn't know where to go. The assignments stopped. They didn't know how to keep creating. I want to help and guide people to foster a deeper connection with their creative process. And it's not a formula. It's not a one-size-fits-all. There's no easy answer, right? But definitely it's going to be, you know, really just very nurturing to each person's unique creative process and just like exploration of that. That's coming. It's called the Beyond the BFA. And basically it's like a container giving a lot of support to folks who want to, you know, just nurture their creative relationship with self. Because I really found that the connection to the self is like a garden for growing a meaningful art practice. And I just want to really hold space for that for people.
And you feel like people abandon that coming out of art school because it's not a career and it gets pushed to the wayside and it's been such an important part of them, obviously, or they wouldn't have chosen that path all the way through school, right? And then you get into adulthood and you have to pay your mortgage and suddenly you're like, I need a job. And then you go 100%. And get a job and you lose touch with that creative side.
110%, yes. And also because I don't think a lot of art programs teach this. And it can be taught, you know, again, it's not formulaic. It's not the same way as teaching art skill, but I don't feel that there's a lot of support in academia. You know, we pay all this money and there's all this support for, but then it's like, what do you do with it? And that could be across many industries and many, you know, programs, right? So for me, it's just about, you know, even if you're not trying to make money, I'm not necessarily over here, you know, trying to help people make a living per se. But what I want to do is just help people have a genuine, authentic connection through their art to themselves. Because I feel like, you know, creating an artistic process that is regenerative comes from kind of knowing the self. And there's a lot of exercises and a lot of different ways with working the imagination and just inspiring that creativity that can really support people to continue that journey beyond just like an assignment that they got in school.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll make sure we link all the places so people can find you easily and, you know, be a part of your journey and do the digital download because that sounds super fun.
Yeah.
So we cannot wait for this episode to air. We will make sure we send everyone the links, but we are on Spotify. We are on iHeartRadio, which is actually just iHeart these days because they have podcasts. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, also on YouTube. So you can watch this episode on YouTube and also just listen to it audio as well. And again, check out the show notes to hear where you can find April. And we'll also write down the recommendations of the books that you shared as well.
April, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate your time, your energy, and all the gifts that you're giving back to this world.
Thank you both for this platform for women and just like nurturing this sisterhood. It's so great. So appreciative of it. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. We'll talk to you guys soon. Love you guys.
Love you.